Welcome to another episode of Tetra Consulting's Fireside Chat podcast. And now we are all about making buildings safer for people. And I have great pleasure to be talking to one of my colleagues today, a man who knows a lot about building safety from a unique perspective. Today, I'm joined by Rob Taylor, our Health, Safety and Fire Operations Director. Before joining Tetra, Rob spent many years on the front line with the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service as an operational intelligence officer and training officer. And as I said, Rob's perspective is unique. He's seen the consequences of poor fire safety decisions up close, and now he helps our clients make sure they don't end up in that position. In this conversation, we're going to unpack the lesson that Rob brings to us from the front line in terms of fire and how they shape his work with clients today, and really what every building owner or manager really needs to know and needs to be doing in order to keep people safe and make buildings safer. So let's get into it. Welcome, Rob. It's a pleasure to be talking to you. So Rob, can you start by giving us a glimpse into your time with the fire service? What was your role and what did it teach you about fire safety at its most critical moments?
So like most people, I joined the fire service as a firefighter quite a while back, 30 years ago. And within that time, obviously being an operational firefighter, being at the sharp end with regards to extinguishing fires, being there with RTCs, house fires, commercial fires, and then kind of the pathway opened up for me to be able to do some qualifications, go through the rank structure and eventually being at the officer level in the fire engine, incident command at fires, and actually kind of tried to dictate how firefighters would then deal with a certain scenario. I then had the opportunity to become a training officer, which taught me quite a bit of the science behind what I was doing as a firefighter, if that makes sense. So doing the firefighting part, but then understanding the science part many years afterwards, was able to put into perspective how fires develop in buildings and the reasons why they develop in buildings with regards to possibly poor construction of these buildings. So latterly, working as an operational intelligence officer, working on projects like Tina Park, which is a big festival in Scotland, working on the Ryder Cup and the Commonwealth Games in 2014, which kind of taught me a bit more with regards to the structure of fire service and everything else.
Great, thank you. And you've seen fire safety from the front lines. What are some of the most powerful lessons or moments that have stayed with you over the years?
I think probably the development of fire and how fire has developed. I think most people watch probably television programmes and movies and maybe think that fire is not this kind of big, thick, acrid kind of damaging smoke, which is the gases from a fire. And I think they just see the orange glow, which is kind of quite mesmerising. Probably the points that I've saw is how these gases, this smoke, travels through buildings and compartmentations within buildings that have been poorly constructed or further on with regards to contractor management of buildings, and how then fire then has just not one seat of fire but multiple seats throughout buildings, and that's how fire develops within the building. So kind of having my eyes open to that from an operational point of view, and how that then kind of fits in with where I am now with regards to fire safety and the prevention side as opposed to the intervention side.
And what's one misconception you come across often when it comes to fire safety in buildings, and why is this particular misconception so dangerous?
I think the education piece. I think people are not necessarily informed enough and educated enough, and I'll go back to that contractor management. I think they manage their buildings but don't necessarily manage the contractors within their buildings or tenants or stakeholders with regards to what one action is detriment to another action. Possibly contractors, you know, plumbers, heating engineers, electrical, telecommunications, that are actually, you know, going to use services throughout a building that may penetrate many vertical and horizontal compartments in the building, but not necessarily remediate with the appropriate materials and fire-rated materials, usually pink foam, which everybody has probably seen at some point. And then how that is then detriment to the fire spread within a building. And that's probably the misconception that people think that contractors are going to do all that stuff. They're probably going to think that they're going to remediate, but they're not, because they're not managing the contractors and the install within the buildings. Either at sometimes even design stage and build stage, and then development stage sometimes with further developments.
Mm. And with this practical experience, this many years of experience in the brigade, how do you find that that influences the way that you work with clients now in your role at Tetra?
I think I probably just answered a bit of that with the education piece. Mm. I think right. A lot of our clients do come to us for education. They do come to us for information. They do come to us because we have had that experience and knowledge over the years of delivering the services, and what we found, not just necessarily in their properties, but in other clients' properties, and how we then can impart that knowledge and experience and information and kind of the education piece to them to try and help them and assist them. I think from my fire service days, it's kind of the informing and education piece is all about listening, finding out what their issues are, finding some solutions to their issues, and helping them and assisting them to be compliant within their buildings, and putting things that are not necessarily been right in the past and moving them forward, so that they can then carry that forward and kind of keep that building at that level and then move forward with regards to fire safety and the enhancement of the fire safety issues and life safety issues in their building.
And presumably what you say carries more weight in clients' eyes because of your experiences from the past, I guess.
Most times, we have many seminars throughout the year and webinars where I have done talks in the past at the Property Institute Oxford Weekender that you know of. We do the round tables and most people will listen because I kind of probably explain it sometimes in layman's terms as opposed to technical terms, try to inform them, get into the nuts and bolts of what maybe legislation is really saying, the Fire Safety Order, the Building Safety Act, the Fire Service Act, what they're really saying and what that really means to them. So from a layman's point of view, explaining the rationale, why they have to do what they have to do, and how they do that, and the consequences if they don't do that, from a reality point of view, as opposed to technical point of view.
Mm. I think one of the early things you said to me was you talked about the fire triangle. That really, when I remember you saying that, and I thought, God, that makes absolute sense. I'd never heard of it before. Maybe you could just share that.
Yeah, which is probably one of the most simple things, and most the simple things that most fire wardens or anyone within that kind of scope for fire within their buildings probably learns at an early stage, that the three things of oxygen, the combustible materials, and a heat source or ignition source, all being that three parts of the triangle, and you need the three parts within the right mixes for a fire to start and develop, and taking away one of these sides, whether that's the combustible materials, whether that's the oxygen in the room, or whether that's the ignition source, then that triangle then doesn't complete, obviously, and the fire would either die and disintegrate, until such times as the third part of that triangle was in included again. So, quite a simple message.
Yeah, it was made it really clear to me. Thank you. So at Tetra, we often talk about going beyond compliance. And what does that really mean in fire safety? And why should our clients and anyone involved in this really care about it?
I think there's some real proactive clients and building and safety managers out there that the way that I think it beyond compliance is that they are actually proactively trying to look at their life safety systems. They know their buildings, they know how their buildings operate, they know the systems that are in their buildings, they know that the frequency driven maintenance and records of them are completed on time, and they are then informing others within the building of the consequences of that. So I think it's this whole education piece again, the informing piece, beyond compliance, probably be more proactive than not, knowing their properties, knowing what they need to do, and then using probably systems, probably like PRISM, to then manage that with regards to their maintenance and their PPM, their preventive measures and programmed records.
And I'm really interested in if you could give us an example where your operational background, something that you've encountered, has really helped shape a better outcome for one of the clients that you worked with here.
I think we've just answered some of that with regards to some of the open and round tables that we do with regards to the talks. Most people are engaging when they hear reality as opposed to, you know, something that's written down technically. And I think people do listen, and some clients listen more with regards to when they want to know more of an operational point of what fire does, what fire spreads, fire doors, compartmentation, which is the big ones at the moment. And I think the scenarios are that, that these clients then engage with me after these events to further enhance maybe their learning, further enhance maybe their knowledge, further enhance maybe the services that we can provide with regards to helping them understand their buildings compartmentation-wise, fire-wise, fire risk assessment-wise, and maybe even down the fire engineering route of fire the fire strategy, and looking at ways that we can assist them to perform better for their buildings and be, going back to the last question, being more compliant and being, being that proactive compliant.
Great, thank you. So the Building Safety Act has brought so many big changes, and I'm just wondering how you're helping and how Tetra is helping clients cut through this complexity and focus on what really matters.
So we kind of we kind of start off by, again, listening to our clients and understanding what their building is. Think of the golden thread, the multiple divisions of documents that they need, starting off with structural, looking at their fire strategy, looking at compartmentation surveys, fire risk assessments, fire door surveys, probably looking at if they have a mandatory occurrence reporting system in place, do they have a resident engagement strategy, which most have, but not necessarily formally. So we kind of gather that information, and we do that as a gap analysis. We look at what they've got, we review what they've got, we look and find out if there's any gaps, it's in the title, find out if we could help them with the gaps, help them if we could look at some of the information they've got and maybe guide them down a route to make that neater and smarter. And then we could then produce their building safety case based on that information, which gives them a clearer view of where they're at, and maybe with some project plans to remediate some of their services to move that building to become more compliant for the regulator.
And that sounds to me like you're talking about proactivity. So from your perspective, what does a truly proactive fire strategy look like?
Going back, I think the clients knowing their building, knowing the services and life safety systems in their building, knowing how their building reacts to events, knowing how to educate the people within their building with regards to events within the building, having a really proactive maintenance regime in place for their life safety systems, making sure that that's up to date, and basically having a recording system, again, coming onto something like PRISM, having that under the one umbrella where they could be driven by frequencies, knowing when the frequencies for life safety systems come, having they recorded on the system, the risk management system, and then being able to then demonstrate that if asked by an attending fire officer, the regulator maybe in the future, to demonstrate that they have their records in, up to date, their maintenance within their building up to date, their life safety systems are current, they've got a system in place that they educate their residents on the event of a fire, what to do. Yeah, pretty much that's the kind of strategy I would expect a good building to look like, and people to know within their building.
And what I'm taking about out of that is know your building. You don't have to be a fire safety expert, but you have to know your building and know when you need a fire safety expert.
Absolutely. You know, we're here to help and guide and assist, but you should know your building first and foremost. The questions that we'd be asking would be the questions that you would know the building, because we don't know the building. So we would be asking the questions, we would be attending the building, and we'd be asking the systems that you have in place so that we could then either agree or help put maybe a remediation program in place to help you get to where you need to be.
Thank you. And a question about sort of culture of safety, which is, you know, how can leaders in property and facilities management create a stronger culture of safety across their teams? Because, you know, it's about everyone's responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's looking at the education piece. I think that's looking at the qualifications of the people that you have employed, looking at their the courses that they've maybe require or have, and how could they then utilise the skills that the courses teach mm-hmm. to better demonstrate compliance within the life safety systems within a building, which is ultimately going to hopefully prevent fire risk within a building and fire spread within a building, certainly with the fire doors, compartmentation, which are the fire spread elements. And that then education to the tenants on the responsibilities that they have with regards to that, and how working collaboratively together, they're looking to have the building life safety and fire safety compliant, but obviously the prevent fire spreading within the building for the stakeholders and the residents.
I think that education piece, particularly if you think about the Building Safety Act and resident engagement, I think that's incredibly important, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the resident engagement has been around for a long time. I don't think it's necessarily been recorded formally as it is now. And I think people are learning to probably formally record a lot of the events and the things that they have to comply with, maybe educate and inform with. Into a document, and we're there to kind of help and guide and possibly write these for clients in the future. But it makes sense, you know, having meetings, informing the residents and tenants of anything in the building that they should be aware of, engaging with them for a bit of education both ways, the things that could be done better within the building from the building safety point of view and the building manager point of view, and collaboratively working, you know, together, as I said, to have a safer environment to live in. You know, it's a sleeping risk, and most events happen that when people are not there or people are asleep, and that's the events that can then determine the spread of fire and the life safety system within a building. So, you know, it's that education piece.
And if we look ahead, if a building owner or a manager is thinking about how they stay ahead of fire safety, what would your advice be?
Well, I think, as we know, the in-scope buildings, the HRBs, the 18-metre rule, and having your golden thread of information for these buildings, I think you should be looking at the rest of your portfolios and thinking that in the future, should only above 18 metres, seven storeys be only pertinent to the golden thread of information, or should that then be reduced to 11 to 18? Now, there are conversations that that's probably the way forward. When that's going to come, I don't know. But I certainly think it's pertinent that, you know, a five-storey building is not less of a risk than what a seven-storey building is as a fire. You can have many more tenants in a five-storey building than you have in a seven-storey building. So they should be thinking about what they're doing in their higher end buildings, that they maybe should be starting to proactively look at their stock from 11 to 18 and below, and maybe kind of still put the same systems in place and make sure that they're not just looking after their HRBs, but looking after all their properties in the same vein and the same thought process.
Yeah, I think it's that proactivity, isn't it? It's just because it's not in the regulations now doesn't mean to say you shouldn't be doing it. Yeah. Similar with commercial as well. You know, absolutely should be being proactive is what I'm taking out of this.
Yeah, well, certainly the legislation's changed for residential and kind of changed for the better with regards to events that have happened in the past. And I certainly think that the commercial element can probably learn some of these kind of traits and the golden thread of information. Whether that's going to be called the same thing in a building safety case in commercial buildings, I certainly think it would be a good thing to start to look at proactively, maybe start to gather that information, have that in the same format that the residential sector has been requested on. And I certainly would think it would be in a good place to be able to then demonstrate that should someone want to see how you look after your building. It's a kind of about the history as well. It's about the history of the building, starting afresh, having a point and moving forward, that the history of the building is now recorded through the many years ahead and the events and the changes and developments and whatever may come of the properties. You have to start somewhere, and that's now.
Yeah, thank you. Any last words?
Yeah, I just think most people should treat fire and fire safety as the number one in their properties. I think they should think proactively with regards to how they And what they are doing within their properties and how they can engage others to try and assist and help them. And that's what we're here for. You know, we're here to assist and help them with the education piece.
Great. Rob, thank you very much for sharing your experiences so clearly. And it's, you know, the knowledge that you bring, not just from a regulatory point of view, but actually from practical experience, is, you know, one of the things that makes our fire safety work at Tetra, you know, so valuable and grounded in reality, I think, at the end of the day. So if you're a client and or want to be a client and you're listening and wondering how we can support with your fire safety strategy or any aspect of fire safety, do reach out, whether it's revealing your fire risk assessments or planning for new regulations, or simply you've got some questions to ask of us. As Rob was talking about, we do plenty of webinars and drop-in sessions and the like. We're always happy to help. So just reach out and we'll have a chat. But thank you very much for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay productive. And remember, as my notes say here, the time to act is before the alarm sounds.
Good answer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.